It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Of course, you missed any part of the show, you can check it out on the podcast. Just search the Hoffman Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It is 5 o'clock. Basically, since the show started, you know what that means.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Nikki Javala is quite literally there. There is in Ashburn, doing important reporting, like the colors of the grass and the bubble, Nikki. Excellent work out of you. Top-notch journalism.
Thank you. You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah. Anything
it's a
else?
Public service that I provide.
Yeah. If you want pictures of the bubble and the very green grass, you can follow Nikki on social media. Anything else that I missed on social that I need to know? Any essential parts of the training camp walkthrough that we should be aware of, Nikki?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that. Very critical update. I guess that means we have to get to the news of the day. Let's start off with the name stuff and the president, and I didn't think that's where I would start the show today, but here we are. And really what I want to understand, Nikki, is like, how serious is this? Like, what mechanisms exist for President Trump to get involved potentially if he wants the name changed? And from talking to folks around the organization, whatever sources you have in city council, Congress, your colleagues at the Post, whatever, like, I guess the real question I have here is, like, how serious is this story versus something that the political folks can deal with whose job it is to report on everything the president says all the time?
I think as of right now, it's probably more along those lines of, you know, you're just reporting on everything the president says right now. And what he did say was that he may ask or may demand that the team change their name or else he'll kill the stadium deal. Mayor Bowser had a press conference today and was asked about the whole situation. And she said President Trump has not, you know, gone farther than that. He hasn't made inroads to trying to, you know, squander the deal or anything, and hasn't broached the subject with them. So and the team, I mean, Josh Harris said in February that they were going to stick with Commanders. I mean, it is only a few months after they bought the team in July of 2023, they said the quote ship has sailed and end quote on the going back to the former name. And we actually did a poll in February. I mean, we do these sort of quarterly polls at the Post and found that, you know, close to half of, you know, area sports fans actually like the name now. It's incredible what winning can do.
Right.
Whereas in previous years, they pretty much hated it.
Right. And the team wasn't winning, and we know how all that went. So we'll keep an eye on it. Your team at the Post, and obviously you and Mark Maskey and everybody else over there reporting on that. But training camp opening this week. And we just talked about the defense for the last half hour, Nikki, and we just kind of posed the question to the listeners and talked amongst ourselves about the biggest question mark we have on that side of the ball. If I turn that question on you, what's the biggest question mark you have for the Commanders on the field defensively entering 2025? What is it?
I think it's pretty basic. Can they be better? And I think that's still an unknown and will be an unknown until they get into the regular season. I thought they really started to get it together as the season progressed last year. But, I mean, they've made significant changes, especially up front. And we'll see how they fare against that, especially against a run, which was their motive and trying to get bigger up front. I got to take this call. It's a really important call.
We can do that.
Okay.
We can do that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you later. Nikki Javala doing. So this is the problem, Anthony. When we have real no more real reporters.
You caught me off guard too.
I get it. I get it. We love having people like Nikki on. We don't pay them to come on. Her editors at the Post and the bosses at the Post pay her to do actual reporting. And like, I remember years ago, Anthony, Chad Dukes had Ian Rappaport on, and like multiple times Ian like hung up on Chad and was just like, "Hey, sorry, I got to take this." And if it becomes a habit, like, that's rude. That's rude. When there's consistently active breaking news, and we know that there's stuff happening right now around RFK, we know the team, like, I hope that that was Terry's agent or someone from the team talking about Terry, which was on my list of things to ask Nikki. Then, like, Nikki wouldn't, if it was someone Nikki could call back in 5 minutes, I think Nikki would do that. We've been friends for a number of years now. If she's going, hey, I'm so sorry, this is a really important call, what am I going to do? No, Nikki, you can't take that. So, of course Nikki can take that call. Should we take calls on what we think Nikki's call was? Should we just own it? Should we have a lot of fun with it?
And like, I got Twitter up right now
just in case.
Yeah.
Just in case. I will say on the Terry thing, like, I just feel like there's something I don't know. I know I talked about this last week, but it just makes absolute. I was looking at the numbers earlier, Anthony, like the cap numbers. There's no reason they can't sign him to, other than they don't think he's worth it and they don't want to sign him to a deal that's like $32, $33 million. On the cap sheet, there is no reason they can't sign him to that. So let me pull this up again real quick. Sorry, I'm now operating on the fly because I was going to ask Nikki these questions. But per over the cap, so if we go to teams and we want Washington, we don't want the ads for the boat insurance. Anthony, you've been buying boats again?
Of course not.
Oh, okay. I don't know why the boat insurance ad came up. So as of right now, does this include the Von Miller contract? Miller. Okay, so this does not include the Von Miller contract, which I think I saw is somewhere around $6 million, right?
6.1.
And I'm guessing that is an actual cap number. But I don't see a Von Miller number anywhere on here. No. So let's say that this does not, this $21 million in cap space doesn't include Von Miller. So they're down to like $15 million. Terry is currently, and that's entering this season, right? Terry is currently scheduled to make $25.5 against the cap. So even if, and often in the first years of extension, they bring the number down, not up. But let's say that they actually go, we have the room. Your cap number this year is going to be 30. Let's make it $35 million. Now we're operating in a little bit of a slim space. $6 million to be able to sign free agents and all that kind of stuff during the year. That's not ideal. So maybe they want to keep it somewhere around 30. So we're down around $12 million. That's plenty of space. Like, you can operate in a regular season going in with $12 million in space. 2026, they currently have $65 million in cap space. And you might go, that actually doesn't sound like that much. Like, it's a lot, but like, that's not a crazy amount. Well, yeah, they can cut Deron Payne or restructure him and save about $16 million. Tunsil is got, there's 0% chance he's playing on his deal next year. He's got zero guaranteed money, and they could cut him and make 21 back. So they'll probably redo that. Now his cap number probably comes down in year one. Lattimore also not going to play on the current deal he's got. He's costing them $18 million against the cap, and they can move on for no dead money. So that number's not going to be there. So just in those three players, we're talking about, that's $55 million of money to play with. Now, again, Tunsil is going to count for something. Terry, you're hoping, is going to count for something. And he's currently only at $5.6 million. That's a dead money. So his cap number next year is probably going to be, let's say it's $30 million in new money, or you try to get that number to like 28. That'd be like 33, because that 5.6 number is not going anywhere. That's a void year from the current contract on a signing bonus. They could restructure Luvu if they wanted in the offseason, give him an extension, bring his number down. There's some money to play with there. Like, in other words, it's pretty easy for them to get over $100 million in cap space to play with, even if a significant chunk of that is going to be eaten, you'd hope, by McLaurin, Tunsil, and Lattimore, if not some amount by Payne as well. But they can definitely play with those numbers. Then in 2027, they have $190 million in cap space already. Obviously, there's not a ton of players under contract there, but there's very, very little guaranteed money in 27. Basically, Kinlaw is the only one with like a real dollar amount that year. He's got no guaranteed money. There'd be $9 million in dead money, but that's the last year of his deal. They can save $7 million by moving on. John Bates will probably get a restructure by then. He's got a real number, a $10 million cap hit that year. But that's basically it. Cosme probably due for a restructure at that point as well. And again, he just signed that deal. And then obviously moving forward, like they don't even do the calculations for 2028 because there's only so many dudes on the roster. That's where the cap space number is. And so they have the room. The question is, like, what is Terry's side asking for? And we don't really know about that. And that makes it really hard to have this discussion. All right, when we get back, I don't know what we're going to do because we were supposed to still be talking to Nikki. But we'll figure it out. We'll talk about some of the things we're going to talk to Nikki about. And then, obviously, 5:30, we have for you Take Command's countdown of the top five most important commanders for 2025. All right, coming up in about 15 minutes, our top five most important commanders that Logan and I settled on for Take Command. We actually did our top 10, which is something we did last year in the offseason on the radio show. Logan and I decided to do it on Take Command this year in just one show. We're efficient over there, Anthony. Pretty good at that. But Anthony is going to try to guess who the top five are in a second. One other thing I did just want to mention, we've been following the NFLPA Lloyd Howell story. Kalen Kaler has been on with us multiple times. Did you see the latest in that, Anthony?
Nah, I haven't.
So one, chronologically, 1-2 here. J.C. Tretter, who is kind of at the center of a lot of this, and I felt like it was oddly getting away with it, because I listened to the initial Pablo Torre Finds Out episode, and like Tretter definitely seems to have his hands dirty in some of this stuff. He was on pace to become the interim executive director. And he not only pulled his name out of that, but he resigned his current position as chief strategy officer. So he's like, you know what? I'm out. That was weird. Two, one of the things that Kalen and our pal Don Van Natta uncovered was that Lloyd Howell, the outgoing he resigned, director of the executive director of the NFLPA, was working as a paid consultant for the Carlyle Group, which is, you know, a big DC consulting firm. And that's a huge conflict of interest because the Carlyle Group has been approved as private equity that could potentially invest in an NFL team. And while he is not working on that project for the Carlyle Group, the fact that he works for the same company, like clearly that's a no-go. And he initially when that came out, he's like, nope, I'm not resigning. I'm not giving that up. I'm not nope, nothing. Now, not only has he resigned from the NFLPA, he has also resigned from the Carlyle Group. Double resignation.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody just signing over their
head. That dude seems to really suck. The more you read about it, I'm sure we're reading about his worst moments, and I would hate to be judged by all of my worst moments, whatever those are. But man, there's a lot of bad moments. There's a lot of worst moments. Sexual discrimination lawsuit where he basically told female executives, like, you can't have that job because it's designed for a man. It's like, what? This was in like 2014. Multiple abuse of expense report funds at strip clubs. Like, you can go to a strip club, you can't charge it to the business. You can't charge it to the company. That's not how business works. Especially the National Football League Players Association. I don't know if you want to do that at your own private business and you want to take clients, like, I guess that's up to you. Not on the approved expenses list. There was like two or three more too that were just like, you did what, bro? So he's out. All right, so that story, if you want to listen to our interview with Kalen from Friday, definitely check that out. Again, our podcast, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Anthony, top five most important commanders. We did it 1 through 5. Do you want to go 1 through 5, or do you want to 5 through 1 it?
No, I got to go 1 through 5.
Okay. Who do you think, and by the way, I don't have the list in front of me. Feels like an important cat. I'm not going to know whether you were right until we listen to the show, the segment back together. I do know who number one is. I do know who number two is. The rest is on a hotel notepad at the Omni in Los Angeles, where I wrote it down and didn't bring it with me.
Okay, so I'm going to assume Jaden Daniels is number one.
That's correct.
I hope you guys did not lose your marbles.
No, we did not, and we talked about, like, we didn't spend a ton of time on Jaden because it's so obvious. Like, I basically set it up to Logan. I do remember this. I was like, so you want to explain to people why quarterback's the most important position in pro sports, especially when you got one as good as Jaden Daniels? He's like, no, not really. I think it's pretty, we respect our audience. We respect our audience. He is, like, one, he is the structural driver of what they do. He executes the offense that they draw up on paper at a high level. But I think, like, it's even more solidly one than basically every other team, because the stuff he does out of structure is so valuable. Like, it's just so irreplaceable what he can do that, yes, Daniels was far and away number one.
Okay, coming in number two. I was a little torn, so I'll give you 2-3.
Okay.
But I'll go Laremy Tunsil and Terry McLaurin for 2 and 3. Part of the reason I say that is because I think we're going to lean a lot on our offense this season. I think Laremy, he steps in. We don't have to chip. We don't have to have, you know, a tight end on his side. Like, we can actually utilize all of our pass catchers, kind of thing. So I think he just makes the life of, you know, Jaden a little bit easier. And then Terry, I think just how dynamic he was last year for Jaden, and just the offense in general. So he comes in at 3.
So I do remember who was 3, unless we wound up changing it. But I'm pretty sure. Hold on. I got to read this to make sure. I now know what Nikki's call was. We don't have to wait. We don't have to wait on news. But she probably write something fun. So I now know. I'll show you in the break, Anthony. Anyway, the point is, Laremy was 2. I can tell you that much. Terry was, I believe, number 4. Do you want to guess who was 3? And then we can talk about it.
So my 4 and 5 are defensive guys for me.
Okay. I think that's also what we had. I don't remember 5.
So
five through 10 got a little squirrely.
Oh, okay. Well, at what number were we at? 4.
For you, were at 4.
4, I had Bobby.
Okay.
And then 5, I had Marshawn Lattimore.
So Marshawn was number 3 for us. And the reason I wanted to lump those together is because there's, like, very similar, and I don't want to give away the whole segment, we're about to play it, but, like, it's a very similar kind of vibe between Lattimore and Tunsil, where it's like, holy crap, if they're good and what they do at that position being good in isolation, oh, we can block this guy. We can cover this guy. We can take out your best pass rusher. We can take out your best receiver. And then what that allows schematically for everyone else is such an enormous driver of success that we thought those guys were the correct 2 and 3. Logan made that argument. You'll hear more about his explanation of why and some of those details next. Terry, we put it 4, which I think is, like, the big thing I want to talk about here, especially coming off the conversation we just had, is I think it's important to, like, realize right now where Terry is on this hierarchy when we talk about him contractually. Like, it's just impossible to ignore that. You can't not have your 4th best player, and, like, he should be paid very handsomely. You're not having to pay your best player because he's a rookie, or he's on a rookie deal. Your 2nd best player, you're going to have to pay soon, and he's probably going to want a lot of money, but you just acquired him. He's going to play out this season on his contract. And then we'll see what kind of level he plays at. He's not in a great bargaining position right now, right? Hey, dude, we just traded for you, and last year you led the league in penalties. So come back and prove that it works in our system, and we'll pay you as the best left tackle in football. If it looks like it did last year, well, then we'll still probably want you, but like, it ain't going to be best left tackle in football money because you ain't playing like the best left tackle in football. And so with Terry, you know, Marshawn, same thing. Like, hey, you know, let's see what you are in our system. Last year, we're willing to wipe away, but let's see. But Terry's up now. And I know that people say, oh, he's got a year left. I'm like, sure. And if the Commanders really wanted to play hardball, they could have shut this down at the beginning and said, we're gonna play this out. Terry, sorry, like, we're not interested in coming to a long-term deal at this time. And if you, unless you want to sign an R number, and if you don't like that, we'll see how the year plays out. And if things get really squirrely, we'll franchise you and you'll come back and you'll make a lot of money next year, but you want long-term security. And I think that's another thing that's worth pointing out when we talk about the Terry negotiations is that is a, in some ways it's a good leverage piece for Terry, but I think in more ways, because of Terry's age, is a leverage piece for the team. They can get away with paying him the 25, whatever this year, as long as he plays, say, we'll franchise you, even if it winds up being mid-30s next year, but at least then you don't commit long-term to a guy who at that point will be entering his age 32 season. It just sucks for Terry. I don't love that, but that is something where, like, once you're starting to get above, you know, $60 million, you're the team, you're like, why would we want to have dead money on the end of that? We're basically almost going to pay that if we just keep you and franchise you in these years anyway. So that's just something to think about. All right, as for our number five on Take Command, a.k.a. Logan's number five, and the reasons why we ordered in more depth and detail, Jaden Daniels, Laremy Tunsil, Marshawn Lattimore, Terry McLaurin, 1-4, we will let you hear Logan and my rankings next here on The Hoffman Show. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about Jerry Jones just shooting himself directly in the foot when it comes to Micah Parsons, because that's the kind of fun we wanted to have on a Monday. But right now, our top five most important Commanders of the 2021 season. When I say are, I mean me and Logan Paulson on that little show we do called Take Command.
Take Command, Logan Paulson there, Craig Hoffman here. It is time to chat about the most important players on the Washington Commanders. Logan, we have crafted a list, 10 most important players. The criteria is a little bit shifting, but we try to encapsulate multiple things in most important. To me, it is kind of twofold on the biggest factors. What's the upside? What's the downside? If this guy were to disappear tomorrow, if he were to get hurt or whatever, how bad would it be? Like, how screwed are they if this guy goes down, most likely due to injury? The other thing is, if this guy has a great season, how does it change the team? And some of these guys have bigger on the plus side versus the minus side. So, like, the depth and all the stuff around them matters. But I think it will, you know, it's obviously not a perfect science, but I think we got a pretty good list here of 10 dudes.
No, I think so too. And again, like, it was interesting when we were talking through them, because it's like, oh, this guy's super important if this. And so we'll try to give that caveat, and we'll probably mention some other names while we're discussing guys. But just so you know, it's that's an element. And then there's also kind of upside element if they kind of reach their potential. So I think that's just important to kind of point out.
Yeah. The number one guy, not surprisingly,
Tress Way.
Yeah. Yeah. If Tress is awesome, then they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's basically how it works. And, you know, Tyler Rotts too. And on down we go. With Jaden, like, Jaden's actually the perfect example of the rubric. We don't need to talk about Jaden a lot because it's obvious, but like, if Jaden is amazing, he's going to have a big impact on their season. If Jaden were to miss some significant time, like, Marcus is fine, but like, right, he ain't Jaden freaking Daniels. So he becomes number one. Anything else you'd like to say about the importance of the quarterback in professional football?
We could do a whole show on why it's important.
For but sure.
Again, they touch the ball every play, and again, the way that he handled himself last year, the composure, the leadership, the playmaking ability, the consistent decision-making, like the no moment's too big for him kind of mentality, the consistent improvement. You know, I did a breakdown for Command Center, and it was crazy watching his big-time throws, because it was like deep ball, outside the numbers. Then as the year went on, probably week 8, 9, over the middle of the field, digs, high crosses, and it just saw maturity, and that's cool to see a guy who's uber-talented, find ways to improve and get more comfortable in the offense. So again, like, he was the straw that stirred the drink, you know what I mean? And Kliff did a great job of insulating him. I just, if he can take the next step.
And then also the stuff he does outside of structure, it's just like, he ticks every box. It's why he was just rated the fifth best quarterback in the league by NFL people, and he's going into year two.
Yeah, so again, like, this one feels self-explanatory. If you want more analysis on this, like, leave a comment. I guess we could do something in the preview show for training camp. But this feels like he's a quarterback, he's good, he's a playmaker. Got it. Yeah, right.
All right. He's also a captain, for whatever that's worth. Laramie Tunsil is who we put at two. That's where the real debate began, Logan. And you kind of were like, I'm thinking Tunsil. I was like, yeah, I was too. Why were you thinking Tunsil too?
Yeah, so for me, it's just like, it's such an important piece in terms of elevating Jaden Daniels. I mean, it's funny because, like, we're talking about Jaden Daniels being the most important piece, then all these kind of subsequent pieces feel like they're supporting Jaden Daniels, right? So, like, I look at Laramie.
It's almost like football's a team game.
Right. I look at Laramie and I look at what he allows this offense to do from a pass protection standpoint. Like, he, even though he struggled last year, he was still like a top, I want to say top six pass protecting offensive lineman. Like, you look at his sack totals, like, they're still cartoonish. Obviously, the penalties are something that you need to kind of keep an eye on. But I look at him and his ability to win one-on-ones in the pass game, his movement skills, like, his presence alone, again, just like little stuff. We can get more eligibles out in routes. We can run deeper concepts. We can attack the middle of the field more. Like, all the things we talked about, you know, getting better on first and second down, like, his just being there allows you to do that, at least on paper. He's got to play well, all those different things. But I look at that, and again, like, that piece is so – it's like, it's not as hard as quarterback, obviously, but, like, there's a reason that offensive linemen and pass rushers go early in drafts. It's because they're impossible to find, right? Like, I saw a statistic. We were getting ready for the draft. Like, if you don't draft a left tackle, you don't get left tackles. And so to go out and find a guy like, this could be revolutionary for this offense because it gives Jaden more – like, think about the stuff Jaden does well. Like, he does not – he's not one of these guys like Joe Burrow that's going to navigate the pocket and dip and reset and do all this stuff. He needs a little bit of space. Like, that's what this addition, it allows him to be himself. It allows Kliff to get more guys in the route concept. It allows you to run more screens. All these things that this offense does, like, he encapsulates it. So if we get a Laramie Tunsil that is, again, like, there's been times in his career he's been a top three player at the position. You know, you're talking like Trent Williams, Tristan Wirfs, Laramie Tunsil. And if you get that kind of production, like, he's a playmaker that we haven't seen here in Washington since Trent Williams. So, again, this one feels self-explanatory, but again, a little bit more nuanced because he's an offensive lineman and not a quarterback.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is, like, it also has the trickle-down effect. There's another lineman that will be later in our list that gets to be on this list in part because of Laramie Tunsil. And so, like, the trickle-down effect it has on the rest of the line versus trying to find a solution or have Coleman at left tackle again and hope that it goes better than it did last year. I mean, Brandon played well last year, but, like, that's very different than the quality that Laramie Tunsil will give you. All right, third on our list, Marshon Lattimore. If he's good, everything changes defensively. Like, the pass rush gets better. You know, literally everybody gets better in every conceivable way if they can just get some, you know, real good, reliable coverage on the outside. The blitz packages open up. You know, you can put help in other places. Just the upside is really where it is with Lattimore. If he's not good and, like, really not good or misses time, the depth at corner, I think, gets squirrely on the outside pretty quickly. So that is also a part of this. But to me, like, it's more about what happens if he's good than the downside of him being bad.
And I think it's kind of the same argument you get for Laramie Tunsil. Like, when you think about defensive backs and what they can give you, especially if they're elite and man-to-man coverage, like, they allow you to do different things defensively. They allow you to be more confident in certain coverage looks against certain matchups. And he, you know, at times, like, who was the guy we had on last week?
Dan Pizzuta.
Dan. You know, he was talking about how he had the highest average value per play over the first 5 weeks of the season. Before
I know.
Injury.
That I almost, like, fell out of my chair when Pizzuta said that.
When he said that. And so if he can get back to that kind of consistency, like, that's going to elevate the defense. And it's one of those things where it's like, usually the rush elevates the coverage. But in this case, like, if he's playing that well, and again, you go back and watch him, like, he's doing a lot of good stuff, but like, that's going to be huge. 'Cause then you get better matchups for Trey Amos, you get better matchups for Mikey Sanristil. Like, that's what that piece allows you to do. It just kind of moves people down the pecking order in terms of matching up. And so I think about the floor and how it just raises immediately if he's playing well. And then let's not start talking about the ceiling, because like, he's going to turn the football over. You're going to get more blitz packages. You can do different stuff. And so I think that's that his addition to the defense gives you a red chip, blue chip type player at a position of extreme value that's going to impact every game, every single week, in a division where you need it against somebody like Malik Nabers, AJ Brown. Like, so to me, this is a CeeDee Lamb. Like, if he can win some of those, and he doesn't need to win them all the time, but if he can just kind of be even, you know, hold AJ Brown to 5 catches for 65 yards, like, that's going to be
no fights.
Like, that's going to be a huge deal for this defense. Again, kind of in the same way that a left tackle does. It just maximizes the rest of your secondary.
Right. And again, like, the help principle of it, like, if you don't have to help Laramie, then you can either not have to help anyone, and you can get more receivers in the route, or you can, you know, help Josh Connerly, the rookie.
Right.
Same thing. Like, if you have Lattimore that can shut down a side, and even you could do like the old Belichick thing. Like, let's put Lattimore on the 2 and double team the 1 with Trey Amos. But like, Trey Amos gonna need help sometimes because he's a rookie. And Mike Sanders still, it's, you know, he played in the slot to start last year. It didn't go spectacularly, but like, how does it go in the readjustment there? So like, I definitely think that Lattimore is an really significant game changer, which is why we put him 3rd. Number 4 is Terry. And we just talked about Terry through the contract lens, but I think sometimes we can almost forget how important he was to this football team last year. And again, if you want a stat to really talk about this, Amon-Ra St. Brown led NFL receivers in EPA or total EPA last year by 78,000 miles. Number 2 was Terry McLaurin. Like, he was better than everybody but Amon-Ra St. Brown. And it showed up in the fact that he was constantly making plays deep down the field, in the red zone. Like, he is, and we'll talk about Zach Ertz here in a few. He's unsurprisingly on this list as well. Like, Zach was enormous in key situations, but like, so was Terry. And I think when this offense really took off last year, it was when they started to focus on getting Terry the ball a little bit more. And at times that it struggled, he wasn't getting the ball. And again, you know, you can go back and listen to our film reviews if you want of the why on some of that, which sometimes is like, Terry needs to be better, but sometimes it was play calling, whatever. But if you talk about importance, like, to me, it's pretty self-evident that like, when he's cooking, this offense is electric. And when he's not, whether it's coverage based, whether it's play call based, whatever, this offense can really struggle to score in the ways that it's going to need to be successful in 2025.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the thing with Terry that stuck out to me, like, again, I was doing this breakdown, so you watch explosive plays, you watch big time throws, and you're kind of going through the list and you're like, a lot of these are Terry, like over 70% are Terry, right? Like, down, like, just straight go balls versus quarters or whole shots versus cover 2, or here, you know, against Cincinnati, like big play moments, like game changing moments. And there's the RPO that he catches versus Pittsburgh. Like, there's a lot of stuff that he did in terms of adding explosive elements to the offense. Everyone talks about, and they should, the, you know, little swings pass he catches against Detroit and takes it to the house. Like, and for an offense that seemed to try to take steps to become more explosive, you know, bringing in the offensive lineman, bringing in Deebo Samuel, finding yards after the catch, like, Terry was the lightning rod in terms of explosive plays last year. And so in terms of like EPA per play, like, it makes a lot of sense to me after rewatching a lot of what this offense did well, quote unquote. And so, yeah, like, I think, you know, having him around for that element is going to be huge. And again, like, one of the quickest ways to get your offense floating quickly is to find explosive plays, right? And Terry did a great job of that last year. And if you were to lose that for whatever reason and not be able to replace it with good playmaking football players, it would be very, very challenging. So I think that's where, again, like, we're not even talking about the leadership, we're just talking about production, but like, both of those things are important.
Well, I do think that's a really great point too, and that's going to come up a couple guys from now on the leadership front. You'll never guess who that one's about. But like, the example he sets, how he elevates everyone, the tone he sets, he's not a, like, t- Terry has gotten more vocal leadership-wise as his career has gone, as tends to happen. But he's not a guy that's always out in front of the room. But, oh, man, when he speaks, do people listen? And that is definitely an element of why he is number four. All right, last one of the first half, and then we'll get to our final five. Daron Payne coming in at number five, Logan. I think that's probably higher than some people might expect, in part because, like, there's a little bit of like Daron being a part of the furniture. Like, he's been here so long, and then people just like overlook how good he still is, or like they're disappointed because he didn't, you know, he had the 111 sack season, whatever. Like, I think people have now in our market on some level underrated Daron Payne, because he has not taken another step to become like truly one of the elite defensive tackles in the league. But this is still an excellent football player who is very disruptive at times. And if he is really good this year with some of the structural changes around him and personnel changes around him, like, and not to mention it is a contract year for all intents and purposes for him, that is a huge game changer for this defense.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at offense, you always think about explosive playmakers, right? Like, Cincinnati's a great example. Like, they have all these explosive quarterback, two receivers. Like, the offense bleeds, oozes explosiveness. But, like, that's the same thing with defenses. Like, look at Philly. Like, they have game wreckers on the defensive line, elite linebackers, good secondary player, really good secondary players, young. And, like, there's an explosive element to a defense as well that I think people forget. And so when you look at the Commanders' defense, I think it can be a very solid group, but it lacks kind of some of those home run hitters. And when you look down the roster, you say, like, who's got the ability to do that? And the guy that jumps out to me is Daron Payne, right? Like, we've seen him obviously have very productive seasons. But I always think it's important to note, like, he at times in his career was deferring or playing second fiddle to Allen, right? And so now it's like, well, it's his show, and so he's going to get schemed up opportunities. He's going to get schemed up matchups. And being watching him, like the physicality, the athleticism, he has the ability to be a home run hitter, which is something that I think, again, when you're looking at a defense, you're kind of like, where's the home run going to come from? Right. And he's a guy that could provide that.
Yeah, there's so much talk and consternation, and understandably so. I'm not trying to you know, be like, why are you guys talking about this, about the Commanders' pass rush? Like, it is not the most prolific group of edge rushers on paper that you've ever seen. But the interior pass rush could be really good. Like, Newton, that's kind of his thing, the twitchiness, the explosiveness, the penetration. Daron is a guy who has had the double digit sack season, and obviously Kinlaw and what he is capable of, the idea of Javon Kinlaw is pretty good. And so, yes, there is something to the edge rusher thing, but I think that the pass rush inside, not to mention the other playmaking, you know, the ability to get tackles for loss, etc., and what happens when Daron is playing with people that will play within the scheme more than John Allen did, that is, and like unleashed to be a playmaker, I think that's going to be very, very interesting for sure for 2025. All right, that's our first five. Our second five, starting with the ultimate leader on the team next here on Take Command.
All right, obviously that was recorded before the Commanders signed Von Miller. Logan and I will break down where we think Miller is tomorrow on the show. We'll let you hear some of that during the Hoffman show as well. Up next, though, let's react. Anthony, you gave me a big whoa when we said Daron Payne, so we'll figure out why Anthony was so whoa on Daron Payne next. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Also, Team 980 on YouTube. So, Anthony, top five most important Commanders from Take Command. Jaden, Laramie, two different people. Can't merge their names together. If you do, you get Jeremy. Jaden, Laramie, Marshawn, Terry, Daron Payne comes in at number five. What'd you think of our Daron Payne naming and logic?
I was very shocked. I think he made our list last year.
He did.
And I think part of the reason he made our list last year was he was 1 year removed from the year where he had his career year and he made the Pro Bowl. But I think coming off two straight years where his productivity has declined, it would have been hard for me to, you know, put him on the list, because I feel as though I mean, I would have just expected him to, you know, remain somewhere in the area of where he was a couple of years ago, and his productivity is just declining. So I don't know. I wouldn't have him on that list. I think if I was to go defensive tackle, I would either go Kinlaw or I would go Johnny Newman.
That's interesting. We did, I think, put Kinlaw near the end because of his potential upside. And I did think about Newton, too, because I think the upside there is obviously tremendously high. Yeah. I think the problem is like what we can't do is confuse production and production based off expectation. Like Johnny Newton could be a really good player in this league. I think that Daron Payne still is a really good player in this league. And if you look at like some of the numbers, like, yes, the 2022 season was definitely his best overall. He had 49 total pressures. And I think it was credited as like, what was it, 11, 11 and a half. PFF does their sack. They don't do half sacks. So they have him as 12, which is the numbers I'm pulling up. So he had 5 last year, 5 the year before, and he had more pressures in 2021 and 2022, but he also played 907 snaps in 2022 compared to 796 in 2024. So some of that discrepancy in total pressures is due to the fact that he played over 100 fewer snaps. He does need to be better. His tackling numbers have been really bad the last 3 years in terms of missed tackles. It's also very hard to tackle. Like if you slow a guy down or you grasp at a shoelace and trip a guy and then Bobby Wagner makes a tackle behind you, like Bobby gets credit for the tackle. You technically get credited with the missed tackle, even though you helped in terms of like how PFF does it from what I understand. Because a lot of like defensive linemen wind up with really bad tackling grades. So I think that Daron also will be asked to do less dirty work, and that is like let him be a playmaker. He also knows what to expect, so I think he's come into camp in better shape this year and kind of understands what's asked of him. That said, if you tell me that Daron plays the level he did last year, can Jerzon play better than that? Yes. Can Kinlaw play better than that? Yes. And in some ways, is that the best possible outcome? Because that makes the decision very easy at the end of the year to move on from Daron and just put Johnny in that undersized one technique spot next to a three technique, five technique type of player in Kinlaw. Like, yeah. But I would rather that decision be hard and that all three of them play really well. Like, and I think if Daron plays well, this defense goes to a different level. He is probably the high, like, I'll put it this way. He has the best track record of any of them. None of those other guys have ever sniffed a Pro Bowl. Obviously, Johnny, it's just year one. But Kinlaw hasn't sniffed a Pro Bowl. Daron's made Pro Bowls. That's the difference. The level, the consistency. And that's the other big thing. The splash plays from Kinlaw, they're just as good as Payne. The consistency of the down-in, down-out production, that's where Daron separates from what Kinlaw has been. Kinlaw does that, now we're having a different conversation. But I think Daron is more reliable, certainly than a second-year player in Newton and also than Kinlaw.
Now, that's fair. That is definitely fair. Again, I just view it, him being on the list is due to what we've seen him do so far. Like,
yeah.
The level of play that we know he's capable of kind of thing. So if he does get back to that, though, hey, I'm with y'all.
For sure. And it's an inexact science, right? Like, we're trying to predict the future. Can't do that. We have to base it some projection, but also some based off what we've seen. What mm-hmm. we've seen informs the projection. And so that's why we put yeah. Payne at 5. Bobby, obviously, was not much farther down who you had in your top 5. And I got no problem with that. All right, when we get back, we're talking hoops here on the Team 980. WNBA All-Star Weekend was actually not that different than NBA All-Star Weekend. But boy, did it feel different. Let's explore that space next.